Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Bourbon and Rye Club. This episode, we'll be talking about secondary pricing at retail liquor stores and what that means for you and what that means for the liquor store and what it means for the distillery. So right now, listen to the Vintage Vandals and Wagon Wheel while we get ready. Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Mickey Pinstripe of the Bourbon and Rye Club. Thanks for joining us tonight. Just got a couple of things on our mind we'd love to talk about. One of them is really the pricing of hard-to-find or unicorn bottles of whiskey at what is traditionally called retail pricing, MSRP, if you will, and what's actually being charged as some of the local bottle shops are getting in on the aftermarket pricing or the gray market pricing or gouging, as some people would call it. I don't really fall into the gouging camp. And for the reason for that is, if I was able to buy a bottle that is really, really hard to find, it's a limited production, and let's say the MSRP on it is $89. Well, they're not going to have a lot of them in the shop anyway. So odds are good that if I don't get there right when they hit the shelves, somebody's going to come in there, scoop them up, and not leave any because, they either want to bunker them or they want to give one to a friend or possibly even sell it on the aftermarket themselves for about a 4x markup. So let's say you have that $89 bottle of whiskey. If somebody can buy it with their card and walk out and turn around and make 400% off of what they paid, it just doesn't make any sense for the liquor stores who have to pay rent, insurance, labor, and make deals with distributors and buy a lot of their booze to get some of these limited edition bottles. Why shouldn't they be the ones that make some of the money on that? Now, I know I'm gonna sound like an apologist for the liquor stores. Look, I don't own a liquor store, all right? But I do know some people that run them either online or in person. And let me tell you, there's some really decent, hardworking folks who really try to please their customers. The problem is the aftermarket customer, the person that comes in and buys it for 90 to go resell it for 4x, is not really their customer. I know you can make the argument that they spent money in the store, so that's their customer. But they're running their own business on the side. Now, either it's a small business so they could get a little extra money, to buy more whiskey or crack or a plane ticket to where they can buy crack. Whatever it is, they're not bearing any of the burden of running a business and paying taxes and rent and everything else. They're merely opportunistic because they happen to walk in when it's there, get it, and now they can sell it and make more money. So from the liquor store's point of view, it's like, if this is not my customer that supports me throughout the year by coming in and buying a 6-pack of, PBR or some Genesee or getting, a bottle of Stoli, not that you should buy Stoli, it's vodka, nobody wants that. But actually a lot of people do, and this is how the liquor stores make their money. And we'll get back to the Stoli thing here in a minute because I want to give you a little perspective on some things later on. But really, if I'm a liquor store and I've got a $90 bottle that I know is going for $400 on the aftermarket, why wouldn't I sell it for $400 in my store? Like, why not sell it to somebody who's really going to appreciate it. Because if they're selling it for the aftermarket price, and I can say this from experience, we're not looking to flip it because you're already buying it at the top of the market. Odds are good that you're going to drink it. At least in my case, I know this is true. So the dilemma for the liquor store owner is, do I alienate my regular customers who come in all the time and buy stuff from me and they get a candy bar and they buy losing lottery tickets and everything else and charge them, the gray market price of, 400% of what it should cost? Or do I risk alienating the aftermarket buyer who's looking to flip it? So it's kind of a no-win scenario for the liquor store. Because you go in all the time and they want you to keep coming in and be a good customer, but they can't offer you that $89 bottle because they know that it's gonna go right out the door, and then you're gonna be tempted because you got this thing that's you could quadruple your money just by putting it on Facebook. Most people are going to do that. I know I wouldn't, but that's me. But I also pay a lot of the aftermarket pricing at some of these shops because they take care of me because they know that I'm actually an enthusiast. I'm not going to sell it. And even if I did, well, no, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't sell it. But they take care of me because they know I'm a good customer and they know that I really enjoy it. And this is what I love to do is I love to collect, taste, and share, American whiskey. So, I have a good connection with a couple of shops because, they know that I can just, they can just, hit me up in a message and say, hey, I got this thing and I think you'd really like it. Do you want me to hold one for you? And, I get back to them really quickly. And when I say that I'm going to get back to them, I do. And when I say I'm going to pay, I do. So I have that relationship built. And I do get a slight discount from some of them from time to time. Not always. I don't ever ask. I don't ever negotiate and say, hey, can you cut me a deal? And here's why. So you remember that Stoli I was talking about? Well, there's a shop down south, Southern California. I say down south, and there could be people literally in the south thinking, where in Florida? There's a shop down south where their distributor, sends them unicorns every once in a while. And I'm not going to name the shop, but I'm just going to say that the amount of volume that they have to do on the regular liquors from these big companies. I'm looking at you, Stoli. I'm looking at you, Brown-Forman. I'm looking at you, Sazerac. The sheer volume these shops have to move is crazy. Now, there's a particular bottle that's coming out. Or just came out not too long ago, and it's limited edition, super, super high in demand. And I ended up paying, high aftermarket price on it. But I asked the shop owner, and he's super cool. And I said, hey, look, like what kind of volume or how many did you get and what kind of volume, did you have to move to get it? Not expecting him to answer, but I was just curious. And he told me is that he had to move about 40 cases of their baseline spirits just to get two bottles of these really hard to find bottles of liquor. And I was really thinking about it. I'm like, God, like we as consumers, we expect to walk into this shop and pay retail pricing, not realizing the amount of money they have to outlay just to get the volume in and get the volume out, and the work that goes into that just to get one or two of these hard to find bottles. So it's stupid to think about them getting these in and just letting them walk out for somebody else to make more money on. Just doesn't make any sense to me. So now we get the downside of the shop and what happens when they start indulging in the gray market pricing. So you have customers who are your regulars, and they come in all the time, and they do buy stuff from you on the regular, or frequently enough to be recognized. And they come in and they see your pricing on your bottles, and they're like, "What the hell? Like, how can you charge that much for something I know the retail price is way less than that, like three times or four times less. Like, how can you do that? Like, you don't value me as a customer to treat me right. Well, the reality is, if it was on the shelf or retail pricing, it would have already been gone before you got there, bub. So how do you continue that relationship with a shop? Well, there's people online that will barrage that shop with hate, bad Yelp reviews. They'll trash them on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, and just, you know, spew hate, going, you're gouging your customers, you don't treat your customers right, you suck, you're an asshole, you know, all these things that they do. But they still don't really consider the fact that if it was sold at retail pricing, they wouldn't be able to get it anyway. So I actually appreciate being able to walk into a shop and at least have the choice on whether I wish to pay that price for that particular bottle, if that's something that I'm looking for. Because if it had been at retail, I would never see it. I would only see it online. It would still be the same cost. So when I'm in the shop, I can look at the person behind the counter, and if they treated me right and I see their pricing and I can afford it and it's something I want to do, I'm going to buy it. Because better to give it to the shop again for paying, you know, rent, insurance, ordering inventory, paying the electricity bills, especially to keep them ice cream bars cold on a hot summer's day, right? So I at least like having the option of paying in a shop. Now, do I like the fact that I'm paying more than I probably should have? No, of course not. I'm not an idiot. I don't have an unlimited sum of money. I would much prefer to be able to pay the retail pricing. But the reality is, the bourbon boom has, you know, resulted in the bourbon shortage. When there's not enough supply for these high-end limited edition bottles, the prices are going to be higher and higher and higher. And now the distilleries have been getting in on the action too. Like, not too long ago, Booker's, which is a pretty decent bourbon, they tried to increase the retail price of it and the wholesale price, which kind of resulted in a little bit of backlash. Like, they were trying to get $100 a bottle, and the reality is it's not a $100 bottle of bourbon. And so the price kind of backtracked and they walked it back over the last year or two. And now you can still find it for about $54 here in California at most BevMo's, and probably better pricing in some of the other places too. But if the distilleries are getting into increasing their wholesale cost because they know that the gray market pricing is absurd, like, where does it end? So does the distillery keep raising the wholesale price, which means the bottle shops have to raise their retail price to discourage the aftermarket? Like, at what point do people move on from bourbon and start getting into things that are less expensive? Like, I don't know, rum, cognacs. Now, I know there's high ends in those, but their entry level stuff is still pretty affordable, and you can find harder to find bottles in those categories than you can in a lot of the bourbons now. Like, I remember last Christmas, I walked into a BevMo 2 days before Christmas, and I happened to find a bottle of the Willett 80 year anniversary bourbon. And I was shocked that it was even in the cabinet. I said, I'll take it, without even asking what the price was. And I was shocked that it was actually a retail price and not their typical BevMo markup. But those are the one-offs. Those don't happen. Those are just like blind, dumb luck. And if I had left it there, I guarantee you before the night was over, that would have been gone too. So I can't rely on blind, dumb luck to find hard to find bottles, because I don't have the time to invest going shop to shop to shop to shop to shop. In fact, there's a shop up here in South San Francisco now. Anytime they get something rare or hard to find, they keep it aside and they do a raffle for it. A lot of shops out there are already doing this in the world because it cuts down on how many people are calling them all the time and, you know, asking, hey, did you get this? Hey, did you get that? They can send out one email, people can sign up for the raffle, and then they can buy the bottle if they win it. And that's an easy thing for a shop owner to do, because man, like there's the demand is crazy. I know I personally send messages to probably a dozen shops that are out there whenever I'm looking for something. And most of the time I don't ever get a reply. Most of the time. There's a couple that do, but mostly I'm ignored because I'm just another voice, you know, in the stadium full of voices that are screaming out for some of these things. So how long before the backlash hits the distilleries and demand starts to dry up for some of this bourbon? Honestly, I don't know. They're talk about the bourbon shortage, but every time you go in a liquor store, there's walls of whiskey. So there's not that much of a shortage. It exists, but as people become bigger enthusiasts in the field, they start wanting to try some of these things they've never seen before or can't get their hands on, which increases the price, right? Until they can't find it. When you can never get your hands on it, even if you had the money to pay aftermarket pricing, you've now created a customer that cannot spend their money, and now they're looking for something else to spend their money on. So the real risk for distilleries and increasing the prices and continuing to put out limited editions, and there's more coming, folks. Eagle Rare's got a 20-year-old coming from Buffalo Trace. Look out, that's not gonna be cheap. The more they put these things out, the more the frustration increases. So we're a part of a bourbon board on the internet, and a lot of the folks on there have given up even looking or hunting for any of the stuff that they used to be able to buy 10 years ago in stores. And now they've just resigned themselves to finding a lot of the really great whiskeys that are under $35 out there. And there are many, many of them. We'll talk about that in a different episode. But they've given up. They've given up on the premium offerings from some of these distilleries. Those customers will likely never come back because the distilleries won't get those, they won't get those bottles out there in enough supply where there isn't an aftermarket pricing and the liquor stores can get back to selling them at retail. Those days are over. So right now the distilleries are cashing in and I don't blame them. The liquor stores are cashing in. I don't blame them either because they know that this business is fleeting. They know that tomorrow it'll be vodka or tequila or rum or whatever. So they're gonna run it, you know, while it's hot. So I think ultimately the point of talking about the gray market and the liquor stores is lay off the hate, folks. It's not the liquor store's fault. They're not the ones that are trying to take every last penny from you. They just see that people are out there paying this amount of money for it. That's the demand. They have the supply. They're paying rent. They're paying insurance. They're paying labor. They're trying to make the money. And I cannot blame them, so lay off them. Give them a break already. If you don't want to pay the price, don't. There's plenty of great whiskey to be had. Get that. Because even if they were charging retail, you'd never get it because you'd never see it because people would buy it and hoard it or buy it and sell it. So get out there, have yourself a good glass of whiskey, enjoy it. Try to think about the people behind the counter, the owners of those shops that are doing their very best to get by and to make sure that there's at least availability for some of this whiskey. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of heat for being an apologist, and that's cool. You don't have to agree with me. It's just a point of view that I've got. To the liquor store owners, be careful, guys, because you know some of the prices are pretty out there. Keep in mind, you do have some loyal customers that want to support you, but they only have so much money too. So make sure that you know, when you do get something in, look, Don't ruin, you know, your life and miss your rent payment or something. But just remember us folks out there, they're actually drinking it. I would love to walk into a liquor store and have a liquor store say, yeah, I got a $90 bottle that's $400. But if you crack it open right here with me and give me a shot, I'll give it to you for $150. Like, I would love to be able to have that experience because, hell, I will drink with anybody. I would love to share a shot with, you know, somebody behind the counter. It might not be legal, but who cares, right? What we do on our own time is on our own time. He ain't pouring, right? So I am. So it's got to be okay. All right, that about wraps up this segment on gray market pricing. I'd love to hear your thoughts if you've got any. You can find me on social media and let me hear it. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about a couple of whiskeys that we've tried recently, and we're not going to give you the review because we're not a bunch of snobs, but we're going to just tell you a little bit about them. So we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Bourbon and Rye Club. This is Mickey Pinstripe. Just wanted to talk to you quickly about a couple of things we tried this week that we're really, really excited about. We just tried Heaven's Door Tennessee Bourbon, 90 proof. Not really sure who makes it, but there's a lot of rumors out there. This is the partnership with Bob Dylan. And I could read you the little hang tag, but I'm not going to because you can find that on the internet. I'll tell you, it's pretty good. It's not the... I don't know that it's worth what the price of it is, about 50 bucks. I think there's better out there, but it's got a really cool bottle. It's got a cool story to it. So if you're into that sort of thing, snatch it up. But I want to get on to Smooth Ambler's Big Level Wheated Bourbon. It's 100 proofer, and man, I got to tell you, we've spent a lot of nights with it this week, and it is really, really great. So, you know, you're probably wondering, well, how's it compared to the Weller? You know what? Different animal. Pricing, you know, for Weller Special Reserve retail is like less than 20 bucks. The Smooth Ambler was about 50, but you can't find Weller for, you know, 20 bucks anymore. So comparable price, definitely. I'll tell you, it's damn delicious. It's tasty. It'll make your kids love you more. No, it probably won't. The kids probably hate you. But, you know, that's none of my business. You can tell me to shut up. Last one that we tried this week that we're super excited about, we busted open a really, really good bottle of Virgil Cane. It's a Robert Baron Rye whiskey. It's a 91 proofer. I believe this is from Virginia. I'm probably wrong about that. It's probably a Carolina whiskey. I'll get back to you next week. Don't really care to edit this out this week. So those are some of the whiskeys we tried. I'll tell you though, Smooth Ambler, the Big Level, if you skip it because of the price, you're making a big mistake. This could be a real workhorse in your bar. So check it out. One more note on the Big Level. It's sweeter than you would expect from a whiskey, but that's the wheat holding hands with the corn, taking it on a long walk, buying it some dinner, making googly eyes at it, sharing a kiss, nice drive home, and I'll call you tomorrow. Real sweet, real good. Give it a try. All right, that's it for this week's episode. We're going to try to get more frequent on this. We're going to close it out tonight with Big Sandy and his Fly Right Boys with Tequila Calling on National Tequila Day. Why that's a day? Well, people like tequila, I guess, but whatever. Not our thing. Siri, take it away. Hey, Siri, play Big Sandy's Tequila Calling.
Okay, let's hear Tequila Calling by Big Sandy and his Fly Right Boys.
Listen, I can hear Tequila calling, and it won't be long before I'm falling deep into that golden spell of me, and I am all the world. I can hear Tequila call my name. Here I am again, alone and on the town. In the last place on earth I should be, but I can't seem to help myself. And there she sits upon the shelf, the one I know to be.
you guys want to interact on social media, you can find us at The Bourbon and Rye Club on Instagram. See you next week.